welcome back to episode 28 of the Red Sox On Deck podcast. This is your host, Bob Osgood, joined by Shelly Verstrait. Shelly, you have playoff fever yet? How are we feeling?
I'm feeling pretty good, especially after that sweep of Baltimore. And we have a kind of sort of easy kind of layup going into the playoffs. So I'm feeling kind of good. How are you feeling?
Yeah, you were calling for Baltimore last week, and that was just what we needed. I'd say I got the fever at this point. You know, the two-game lead suddenly, and hopefully things work out tonight against the Mets to get another sweep and keep the yellow jerseys going. I got to admit, I'm not a huge fan of the jerseys when I'm watching the game, but if they're going to win every night in them, I think I need to adapt here because it's getting a little bit out of hand. But yeah, I got the fever enough that we've locked in our seats for the wild card game. So I'm really hoping that we can pull off that four seed and have the wild card game at home. I'm not trying to jinx anything, but I'm also trying to be there in our one opportunity today. So yeah, I'm ready to go, and I'm trying to get into Fenway once or twice over the next week or over the next month, and I hope it's just beyond a one-game playoff, but got to get there first, and there's a huge series this weekend against the Yankees. We wanted to hit on a couple major league topics as some of these minor league teams have ended their season, and a little less to talk about there. Ended up seeing Chris Sale here, throwing on regular rest, 4 days rest, which we weren't sure last week. That was one of the topics, and it happened. So good to see they're pushing him a little bit the last couple weeks of the season after a 10-day layoff.
This season, prepare for every season with the Allbirds Mizzle Collection. These shoes were made for adventures in rain, shine, mist, or snow. Go to allbirds.com and use code FRESHSOCKS for a free pair of socks with your purchase.
Yeah, I guess I was kind of surprised that they threw Sale against the Mets versus the Yankees. But, you know, I was talking with Keaton on the pre-cap pod, and he had brought up, you know, that Cora said that they just want to just maximize Sale starts. So as long as they can get, like, that extra start from Sale, even if it's not against the Yankees, that's kind of what they're going for. So when he brought that up, I'm like, okay, yeah, I get it. It just kind of felt kind of odd that they, you know, Sale was going up against the Mets instead of the Yankees, but yeah.
Yeah, it's funny. It's the opposite of what I ranted about a month ago, where we didn't line him up to face any of the teams that we were competing against, the Red Sox were competing against.
Yeah.
But it's totally different at the end of the year. You need as many wins as possible, and at this point it doesn't matter who they're against, especially when you're in the driver's seat. Maybe if they were chasing New York and needed that win, it might be a little bit different, but that is a good point. I was looking ahead to next week, where they're going to be in an NL park, which is strange. You expect to have division games at the end of the year, and obviously with 15 AL teams and 15 NL, somebody has to end the season facing interleague play. All of a sudden, I feel like there's a debate of who would sit in a National League park. Especially the way that Bobby Dalbec has been hitting is probably the hottest hitter in the American League over the last month and a half, I guess since the trade deadline when Kyle Schwarber trade lit a fire under his ass, it appears. But who would you expect to sit? You know, if there was one game that you needed at the end of the season and it's in that NL park, who do you think would sit? The four names that come to mind for me are Dalbec, Schwarber, JD Martinez, and Alex Verdugo, just as your corners and your outfielders.
For me, it definitely would have to be, is it a righty or a lefty? And that is really determination. And that determination would basically be between Dalbec and Schwarber. And, you know, they're going into Washington for the last kind of weekend. It really does depend on that. As much as I know that JD has kind of been not the JD that we had seen from a couple of weeks ago, he still needs to be there in the lineup. Same with Verdugo. He's just a good, steady Eddie kind of guy. So, to me, it depends on who's on the mound. Righty, lefty, and then that's who is in the lineup, either Dalbec or Schwarbs.
Yeah, that's interesting, because I can't think of a scenario where I want Dalbec sitting there, especially with the defense. I think that you have to, if you need that game, you got to have the best defense out there, and Dalbec checks that box, which Schwarber doesn't, and JD doesn't. So for me, it's between Schwarber and JD, and I'm just really down on JD Martinez right now.
Yeah.
You look at the season as a whole, and it doesn't look that bad, but those first 5-6 weeks of the year were so dominant. You were talking MVP at that point. And now I want to see him and Dalbec switch spots in the lineup. I would be fine if Dalbec hit 5th and Martinez hit 7th. So it'll be interesting. I mean, the hope is that you've clinched with a couple of days left and you can kind of circle through and give everybody a day or two in that last series and line up your rotation and not use Chris Sale that last day of the season and be able to use him in a wild card game. But we'll see. It'll be interesting. If you had to, I'll ask you two different questions here. What would be, for that wild card game, your playoff prediction compared to your hopes? What do you think will happen versus what you want to see happen, which we actually talked a little bit about in the Over the Monster roundtable last week?
So you talk about, like, pitching matchups?
No, the teams. The two teams that you think will be in that one-game playoff and who you want to see in that game.
Okay. Who do I think is going to be there? I think it's going to be Red Sox and Blue Jays. I'm hoping for, like, a Chris Sale-Robbie Ray matchup, because that would be just super, uber sexy, right?
Yep.
But... yes, I think it's going to be those teams, but I mean, I would like to see the Yankees kind of get into it, but I just don't think they have the firepower to get there.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out a way for the Red Sox to win the series this weekend, and it's still being mathematically possible for the Yankees to end up in that game. And I think they can, because especially if Boston just takes 2 out of 3. I'm sure they could overtake Toronto between that, but if it's a sweep, I think it'd be unlikely. So, end of the day, I've got the same answer. I do think Toronto has just so much firepower. You know, they had a tough series here against Tampa Bay, losing 2 out of 3, but I think that down the stretch, you know, they're hitting, and with Ray leading that rotation, I think they'll sneak in, but, man, it would be an absolute spectacle to see that, whether it's at Fenway or the Bronx, a one-game playoff, you know, retribution for Bucky Dent 40-50 years ago would be pretty incredible. So that's what I'm hoping for as well. But anyways, moving on to some minor league news. We've got our final standings in a few different levels. The only teams still playing, as we mentioned last week, will be Worcester for this week and next, and then the DSL teams as well. The Portland Sea Dogs finished the season 67-47, excellent record, but couldn't quite sneak into that top two that was necessary to get into the playoffs. Greenville was eliminated before last week. They ended up at 67-53. And Salem, 71-49, outstanding record, but ended up a little bit of a disappointment as they lost 4 of their last 5 games to end the season. We mentioned on last week's pod that they had the upper hand on down east, and they ended up losing 4 out of 5, and a couple of tough losses there. You know, Friday they had Wilkelman Gonzalez going. He threw 4 shutout innings, and then Jordan DiValerio gave up 7 runs in relief and got the loss there. They ended up coming back to win on Saturday, where Tyler McDonough had a couple of hits and a home run. And then Sunday, it sounded like it was in front of them. They had a 6-1 lead in the 6th inning, but made a couple of errors, few unearned runs, and ended up falling behind and losing by a run there. So we were hoping to see one team that we could continue to talk about in a playoff environment to bridge the gap until hopefully the Red Sox make the playoffs. But team Worcester, 66-52, they're 5.5 games back of Buffalo, so they are in a similar boat where it's unlikely, unless they go on a huge run down the stretch here, to they don't have a playoff, but to get crowned the champion there. And then the Complex League Red Sox, they ended up finishing their season at 37-20. So no playoffs to speak of. We'll probably do some recaps of the season over the next couple of weeks and keep talking about Worcester. We have some players that got promoted there over the last couple of days to get some additional at-bats and innings, but we'll talk about that in a minute. Some minor league award winners were announced by the Red Sox on Tuesday. They're being honored on Wednesday night, tonight as we're recording at Fenway. Offensive player of the year, infielder Nick York, which is not much of a surprise there. Defensive player of the year was Sadon Rafaela, and he just open up a couple links here. Excuse me. Starting pitcher of the year, Brian Bayo. Relief pitcher of the year, Durbin Feltman. Base runner of the year, Christian Koss. Latin program position player of the year, outfielder Alan Castro. Latin program pitcher of the year, Jedickson Paez. And the Lou Gorman Award, which is the Red Sox minor league player who has demonstrated dedication and perseverance in overcoming obstacles while working their way back to the major league team, went to Cutter Crawford. So any initial thoughts, and we can go through a few of these players and kind of why they got those awards, but anyone that surprised you here, Shelly, or you think all pretty deserving award winners?
I mean, I thought they were all pretty deserving. I mean, we all saw what Nick York did this year and how he just totally went gangbusters after a really slow start, so I'm not surprised that he won that award. Sadon Rafaela, you know, like, defensive player of the year is kind of really hard to judge if you're not watching games all the time. But, you know, I've really heard some good things about his defense. So kudos to him. Brian Bayo, like, he was like a really just a really, really, because, I mean, we haven't had like a lot of good starting pitching here recently, and we've had like some guys come off you know, the last couple of months. You know, we had Bayo, we had a couple other guys as well, so just seeing just a couple of starters kind of
there's one name that we're going to talk about in a little bit that threw his hat in the ring down the stretch.
Exactly,
good friend of yours.
Exactly, like, we've had like a lot of interesting starters that I don't remember, like, the last couple years have we actually had starters to actually get excited about. So, yeah, Brian Bayo, I totally got that. And then Durbin Feltman, I was actually surprised that he didn't get, like, some run in Boston. He was performing pretty well. So, honestly, with all the awards, I thought they were all justified.
Yeah, we talked about Feltman last week, how we're hoping... it seems like he kind of revamped his delivery and just mindset overall after high expectations, and has really been good down the stretch this year as a 2.90 ERA over 37 appearances combined in Portland and Worcester. But, you know, really improved in the second half of the season with his ERA. In fact, after he got promoted to AAA, York combined, even after the slow start that we've talked about, ended up having a 928 OPS over 97 games between Salem and Greenville. He's got his average all the way up to 325. He had 14 homers, 13 steals. So, no, that was the least surprising of all of them there. And then just good to see a Cutter Crawford hat tip there at the end as he overcame Tommy John surgery that he had in 2019. He had been a 16th round pick, so, you know, not the most likely player to make it to the major leagues this year, and he got that one appearance. He got a start, albeit during the COVID outbreak, but great to see a player come back from adversity like that. So certainly a deserving award winner there. Looking at a couple of promotions, three promotions in fact, Tristan Cassius, Ronaldo Hernandez, and Josh Winkowski all are going to be up with Worcester for the last 2 weeks of the season. And with Hernandez, Ronaldo Hernandez, catcher, is interesting because I think, I want to say it was late July, that I talked about him being a bit of a disappointment, someone that had been added to the 40-man, and us, you know, the Red Sox, between he and Connor Wong looking for a catcher of the future, and it didn't appear that we were seeing that. And both of them have been excellent the last 2 months of the season, probably since I said that about Hernandez. He's had multi-hit games in 11 of the last 15 games that he played at Portland this year, which is just an insane stretch. Had a couple of homers on Wednesday last week, had four RBIs on Thursday. Since August 1st, kind of that cutoff, he's hit .323 with six homers, 30 RBIs, and 21 runs. You know, overall in the season, 16 homers, so quite a few of those came down the stretch, but he's got his average all the way up to .280. Doesn't take too many walks, but also does not have any high strikeout numbers. Everything has been below 20% at every level, so you know, he's one of those names that you weren't sure if he didn't have a hot finish, whether he would survive the 40-man cuts at the end of the season, and I think that he probably will at this point. So we've talked about Tristan Cassius plenty. I don't think any of us were surprised by that promotion, and I'm honestly hoping he gets a few more at-bats at the Arizona Fall League. I don't know whether we'll see that or not. We're hoping for those names next week, but any thoughts, Shelley, on Hernandez or on Josh Winkowski?
Yeah, I was kind of surprised that both of them got called up to AAA for like this last week. I guess they were just trying to get like a few more little looks there to see if they really wanted to add these guys to the 40-man. But honestly, I think Renato Hernandez and Josh Winkowski definitely needs to be added. Hernandez has just been killing it, and you know, our catching kind of prospects have been just really piss poor, you know, so just having a guy who can hit reliably, like we just need to take all of the lottery tickets that we can. So
yeah,
seeing that Hernandez is just like really hitting well, yeah, I think there's going to be added to the 40. And then Josh Winkowski, he was kind of like a throw-in, you know, with the trade. And he's just been just kind of a really solid dude.
Yeah.
I don't know if he's really going to be like a starter going forward, but just seeing him just pitch extremely well, it's just a really, really great sight.
Yeah, we throw out strikeout numbers a lot with different pitchers, and looking at his, he's got 88 strikeouts in 100 innings. So he's more of a pitch-to-contact guy, but he definitely has multiple secondary pitches that that he can get strikeouts when he needs it. And, you know, it's not the worst thing to have command-control guys, you know, your Kyle Hendricks types in the world. You know, hopefully Winkowski can be one of those. We'll see what he's able to do against the AAA competition. 23 years old, so still pretty much on track. And, you know, potential back-of-the-rotation type of starter for Winkowski. I wanted to take a lap on a player that you were totally right about, Shelley. You, about a month ago, chronicled Brandon Walter. So if I need to do push-ups or suicides, whatever it is, you know, let me know. 25-year-old, 26th rounder in 2019 is when he was drafted. So wasn't really on our radar a whole lot coming into the season or even halfway through the season. But in his last 9 starts with Greenville since he had been promoted up there, 4-1 with 65 strikeouts in 46 innings. Now, including an 8 earned run performance in those 9 starts, he has a .233 ERA in that time, an .084 whip, .166 batting average against in his last 9 starts. And if you look at his splits for the entire season, I know he's about 34% called strike whiff rate before his promotion when he was at Salem, and then about 36% up at Greenville. So he finished the season strong last weekend with 5 innings, giving up 1 run. He had 8 strikeouts. He didn't walk anybody. You know, keeping the walks down, striking people out. And I know Matt Collins with Over the Monster said you can make a legitimate argument that he was the best pitcher in the system. You know, maybe not the highest ceiling prospect, but the best pitcher in the minor league system this year. And the more you look at it, with just an incredible last 2 months of the season, the more you can make that case. So feel free to take a victory lap or add anything that you have there.
Yeah, I mean, I just like the dude because honestly, going into the season, I didn't really pay him any mind. But you know, I look at minor league box scores every day, and I just kept seeing Brandon Walter just mowing down, you know, guys in like Greenville. I'm just like, who is this guy? I don't know who this guy is, but I'm like, yeah, okay. So I started to do like a little bit more research, and it's basically he just had like this huge velo bump from like the upper 80s to like mid 90s, and he's like kind of like totally changed his just kind of mechanics a little bit. And yeah, he's actually a really interesting guy, even though that he was like 26th round pick. Again, he is old for the level. He just turned 25, so he's 24 for pretty much the entire season. So, yeah, he's a little bit old for the level, but even that being said, like, he is still performing extremely well. So, yeah, this is a guy that I'm, like, really excited to see, you know, what he does next year. I don't know if he's going to go to the AFL. I'm kind of, you know, fingers crossed that he is, because I'll be there for the first week of the AFL, so I'm hoping I get to see him live. But
there you go.
Even if he doesn't go out there, I am really will be watching him next year, because he totally just blew my mind. A 26th round pick doing this, it's crazy.
Right, in his first go around there. And you know, like we said, with the age, you still need to perform. It doesn't matter. And had a 1.45 ERA at Salem before the promotion. So you say, okay, you know, this was deserving, and then did the same thing. Now, again, his ERA was 3.70 at Greenville, had a couple tough starts, and then bounced back, fought back from that very well with just crazy strikeout rates. So yeah. Brandon Walter, that, you know, that is the most pleasant surprise of the season for sure. In my mind, the biggest disappointment was Hudson Potts. And he was kind of touted as, you know, we knew he had plus raw power, needed to see it in games, but it still seemed like going into this year, a lot of folks thought that his versatility and just the potential that he could still be an MLB starter, and it really seems like time is running out for him both to be a starter, but also possibly to be on the 40-man roster, as there's going to need to be some cuts this offseason and some players that are added. And then I know that this is going to be with the bargaining agreement and having money under the luxury tax, there's going to be a lot of movement around the 40-man. And, you know, former first-round pick that came over in the trade from San Diego 2 years ago, or I guess in 2020, and this year he hit .217, his OBP was .264, he had 11 home runs in 78 games, and actually, I think, had 3 or 4 home runs in the last couple of weeks just to get to that 11 home or 47 RBI. You know, the season before at AA, he hit .227 in San Diego with a .290 OBP. The year before that, his first go-around at AA, albeit in 22 games, he hit .154. So we're just not seeing it here. We haven't seen it since 2017. That he has produced, and I think it's probably a likely cut this offseason.
Yeah, I 100% agree. I mean, I liked when, you know, we kind of traded for him or, you know, assigned him, and it's like, yeah, you got to take a flyer on, like, a first-round draft pick from a, you know, a few seasons ago. But, I mean, we haven't seen anything. Just like you said, we haven't seen anything for a couple years. And throughout the entire year, you cannot roster a .264 OBP in AA. You can't. You just can't. Sadly, I do agree. I think that he's going to be cut off the 40-man because, yeah, you can't. It sucks, but you can't. You can't.
Yeah, and he's still, you know, he's 22. He'll be 23 in the offseason. And just to clarify that, he did come over in the Mitch Moreland trade along with Jason Rosario last year. So I'm sure he'll catch on somewhere, but it's my guess for a possible cut this offseason. A couple of other minor league notes that we saw from the last week. I wanted to check again on Jeter Downs because we talked a lot about his average in the 170s and the 180s and whether he could even be demoted, and or whether you kind of keep him at AAA, you know, would be too much of a confidence killer. And I was actually there on September 7th when he came off the IL, and he had two hits, and he had a third ball that just narrowly missed being a home run, and another one that narrowly missed being a double down the line, and his swing looked great, and I was just like, you know, I'm not seeing any swing and miss. Of course, you go to one game, and it's pretty hard to get the full picture. And saw that he has three home runs in the last 2 weeks, but still just 8 for 36 in that time frame over the 2 weeks, and 13 strikeouts, and I don't know. This is going to be certainly a debated one in the offseason, and we'll see whether Jeter Downs is, hopefully his confidence is not lost, but these strikeout numbers have continued, and his second half has been worse than his first half. So that's a tough one. And then that one, the other one, Connor Siebel down at Worcester, had 5 shutout innings, going back down after his start at Boston. Good to see him pitch well. We could see him again, whether it's, you know, to fill a spot if they clinch or if they need an arm down the stretch. They're getting a lot of arms back from the COVID IL at this point. And then Brian Baio, Shelley, you brought up earlier, finished the season with 5 innings, 1 run, 6 strikeouts. And Pedro Castellanos, another name who had some big games down the stretch. He was 4 for 4 on Saturday and 2 for 5 on Friday with a home run at Portland. So you know, just a few other names. I'm not sure if there was anyone else that you wanted to highlight that you saw over the last week.
Not really. But I kind of want to pick your brain a little bit on Jeter Downs.
All right.
He was in AAA the entire year. They kept him there, which makes me kind of think that they still believe in the guy. However, do they start Jeter at AAA next year, or does he get that demotion to AA? Just how much that he struggled this year.
Yeah, he's going to AAA again, I think.
He is, okay.
Because he's 23 now.
Yeah.
Oh, man. 182, 264 OBP, 330 slugging. WRC plus was 58. They have 14 homers, 35 RBIs. 38 runs, 17 steals. Yeah, I just think that they have too much invested in him, and I think that you allow him to repeat the level, but
yeah,
I don't know, 33% strikeout rate. But you have to hope that they make some adjustments in the off season, and that he works his butt off, and that, you know, makes some adjustments and fights back, and that things were just kind of mental for him down the stretch, because we know the talent's there. We know what he's done at some of the lower levels, you know, at high A in 2019, at 19 homers, 23 steals, and had an OBP of 354. Like, we know it's there, and we've read all the scouting reports, and the guy came over in the Mookie Betts trade. You can't just give up on him after totally a year, agree. But I don't know. Am I off base? What do you think?
No, I mean, that's what I was thinking, too, because it's like, I mean, I was kind of, like, thinking about, like, yeah, maybe they, you know, maybe the you should, like, demote them back down to AA, like, a couple months ago. I'm like, what's the point of that? That's going to, like, totally just let him go. Let him figure it out. Yes, this year has just been kind of awful and kind of like a waste, but hopefully he can totally get it back, because, I mean, we've seen the talent before, so, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, reading a couple of reports on games that I didn't go to, or talking to people I knew that went to games, you know, it just seemed like there were breaking balls that he was missing by 2 feet kind of thing. It didn't seem like he was just, you know, a small adjustment away from breaking out, so that's what I'm worried about, but, yeah, I don't know. I could see it going either way for sure. So, all right. Well, if you enjoy what we do here, please leave us a 5-star rating and review on any of the podcasts that you listen to with Over the Monster. We've got Matt Collins and Brian Joyner, who do the Over the Monster podcast. We've got Jake Devereaux and Keaton DeRocher on the Red Seat. We have the Precap Pod with Shelley and Keaton, as Shelley mentioned earlier. And going to be some great content these next couple of weeks, and hopefully, you know, at least a week or two into October, we can continue to be talking about this season. It's been a hell of a lot more fun than last year. So thank you for joining us, and we'll talk to you next week.